This is Jeff Blankford. My guest through Skype is Grant Smith in Washington, D.C. Grant is the director of the Institute for Research in Middle East Policy and has been on Takes on the World many times. He's become the foremost expert on Israel lobby and its origins and operations, as a number of books he has written on the subject attest, and what our media ignores. They provide fascinating, disturbing reading, and they can all be found by going to his site, www.irmep.org. Welcome, Grant Smith, to Takes on the World. Hello, Grant.
Yes, Jeff. How are you?
Welcome. You know, we planned to speak 3 weeks ago about what was then your upcoming conference and the censorship by the media of stories unfavorable for Israel, but the gremlins of modern technology got in the way, or maybe yesterday's technology, I don't know. Today, however, with your unheralded conference and AIPAC's latest Nuremberg rally, now history, it seems a better time to talk, no?
It does, because there's so much to talk about.
Well, first tell us what was important about the conference. You're IRMEP's co-sponsor with the Washington Report on the Middle East affairs that we should know about, and where can our listeners see it if they choose?
Well, the most important thing about it, I think, was that we were able to hold it for a fifth year running. It's the only event that looks at the source of the primary obstacle to peace in the region, which is the Israel lobby in this country, and what their agenda is. And so I think it was important not only that we were able to gather so many new and unique voices from a range of domains to come and provide their expert views, but also that we were also able to at least get it covered by C-SPAN 2, and they, in fact, did take some of the content and interspersed it with the AIPAC event over the same channel to provide some context. That, as you mentioned, is context that is nearly always censored out, but that's a small victory. But you're completely right in the fact that the presentations by Lawrence Wilkerson, by Virginia Tilley, by Barry Trachtenberg, by Ali Abu Nima, have generated absolutely no comments from the mainstream media, even as it was presented in such a timely fashion so that they could see some views that differed from the AIPAC view.
I was particularly impressed once again with the presentation of the Israeli journalist Gideon Levy, who is your featured speaker and whose presentation I'm going to be playing at a future broadcast of Takes on the World. But Levy, when I was back there several years ago, referred this as the United States of Israel because of the domination of the lobby. He's been interviewed on Democracy Now!, but generally someone like that who is so important in Israel, controversial, would be of interest to the American media and the American public were they to hear it. There was actually a time when Israelis who were critical of their government's policy, and this was back in the 80s, did get airtime. I used to get them airtime and TV time in San Francisco, and yet this has been closed, has been a closed door since. And you've experienced that, of course, yourself.
Yes, yes. Well, Gideon Levy was phenomenal, and this is his third time presenting at the conference, but he doesn't provide a lot of hope. You know, members of the audience wanted him to come up and say things like, oh, B'Tselem and some of these Israeli soldiers who are conscientious objectors, they represent a growing group. And, oh, the Israeli left, it's, you know, supportive of better policies. It's too bad they're not in power. But he just swats those down and he said, no, none of that's true. There really is no giant progressive surge in Israel, and those of you who think there is are deceiving yourselves. And so he comes in and presents a dose of reality. And this is, again, a Jew who was criticizing the Israeli invasion of Gaza as the bombs were flying and the tanks were rolling. even though it was immensely popular among the Israeli public. And so he managed to explain why he was able to do it and nobody else seems to be able to. He basically said that his paper, Haaretz, is an island in the country. It's unique, and they get hit all the time with criticism, but they have an editor and publisher strong enough to say, look, if you don't like it, this is clearly not the paper for you. There's no publication in the United States that does the same thing.
What was very depressing for me was to hear what he had to say about the organization of former Israeli soldiers called Breaking the Silence, who have been going around this country as well, speaking to small audiences, about the atrocities at their comrades, and some of them had committed themselves on Palestinians and Palestinian prisoners. And when he said that this group has been crushed in Israel by the opposition of the majority of Israelis, that was a very depressing moment, even for me, a lifetime pessimist.
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about it, though, and I have to agree with them, it has been. But the idea that these soldiers shed a tear every time they shot a Palestinian is a little bit hard to swallow anyway. So I have to admit, I've seen their presentations and haven't come away terribly impressed either.
Well, actually, there was an expression coined during the 1982 war in Lebanon. It's called shoot and cry.
Right.
And there were, at that time, 2,000 Israeli reservists who either refused to go to the war in Lebanon or, having gone into the war believing they could persuade their comrades that it was the wrong war, realized that it wasn't. And some of them went to jail, but they refused to serve again in the occupied territories as well and in Lebanon. And a number of them I interviewed who had emigrated to Israel. When I went back 20 years later, they had gone back home to their real homelands in Latin America. Lawrence Wilkerson, who is very well known, I mean, he was very important. His talk on the same people who brought us the Iraq War are bringing us the war in Iran. We heard what Congressman Jared Huffman told the Marine Independent Journal back 2 years ago, and this is essentially what Wilkerson told the audience. He's a really important person, and his credentials in terms of being in the U.S. military and government are impeccable, if that's your criteria. And yet, when he speaks critically of what this government has been doing, he's also silenced.
Right. He can only get in a very watered-down op-ed into the New York Times every once in a while, and then he almost immediately follows it up with an alternative media interview fully unfolding his views. But he made it clear in no uncertain terms that with 3,200 U.S. troops in Syria and with Secretary Mattis and Secretary Tillerson both saying that they're there to confront Iran, that you've basically got a World War I-style situation in this region that could quickly unfold into a major world war, let's not even say major war. And so he is extremely worried that all of the ingredients for yet another injection of falsified, politicized intelligence to suck the U.S. into a confrontation with Iran or maybe even Russia is already in place, and it's just unfolding, and he's seen it happen before, and he warned everybody in the audience about what was going on, and yeah, crickets in the mainstream media, but terrified audience members and participants and members of the alternative media at the conference.
Well, your own presentation that began the conference, which I really recommend people watch, you covered a lot of information, but you also, regarding Iran, referenced a comments made by Patrick Clausen of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, one of the leading think tanks in Washington, started by AIPAC in 1985, on creating a false flag incident, which he joked about, which he justified the U.S. getting into the Iran war. Perhaps you comment on that.
Sure. As you have mentioned before, the Washington Institute for Near East Policy is basically AIPAC's think tank. It was started by funds from AIPAC donors. And back in 2012, the director of research, Patrick Clausen, went through an entire analysis of all of the what he calls crisis initiators that sucked the U.S. into war. And then noticed that they all happened to be naval institutes, whether it was Pearl Harbor, the sinking of the Lusitania, the Gulf of Tonkin affair, the USS Maine, which sucked the U.S. into the Spanish-American War. And so his analysis was, well, wouldn't it be interesting if an Iranian submarine went down in the Persian Gulf and then didn't come up? Maybe that could be the crisis initiator to get the U.S. To attack Iran. And he made it sound like the U.S. already wanted to, which was clearly not the case. He said, quote, "It's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us into war with Iran." Well, the United States president didn't want a war with Iran and was trying to get the JCPOA through against a staunch opposition of the American Jewish Committee, AIPAC, the ADL, etc. So it was interesting to review that and the fact that the entire AIPAC espionage affair of 2005 was really related to their attempt to plant U.S. stolen U.S. national security information with major media. And they thought the information could help provoke a U.S. attack on Iran. They thought that they could prove that Iran was attacking the United States and Iraq. So the Israel lobby has been at this covertly and overtly for quite a while, and as you mentioned, with this new 2012, this new December intelligence and covert military operations plan, it could obviously go as badly as Wilkerson thinks it will.
Well, it's extraordinary that here it is, December 12th. This was signed. It was announced on Israeli television and confirmed by the Israeli media. Concerned by Washington, on December 28th, and here we are in March, and still no discussion and mention of this by the U.S. national media, other than on this program. We're not quite national yet. And yet here, Netanyahu referred to it yesterday or the other day after his statement, after meeting with Trump, and nobody said a word about this in the media, even questioned Netanyahu, what did he mean by this cooperation? It's extraordinary how the press becomes complicit in this censorship. You know, one thing you posted about is a report by Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera made a investigation, it infiltrated the Israel lobby in Britain, and it made a film which was available, and then the same thing with the United States. Tell us about that.
Right. So it's a really good example of censorship by power of the lobby. And in this case, it's the American Jewish Committee, the Zionist Organization of America, the American Jewish Congress, all started pressuring the government of Qatar with all of these extraordinary threats. They wanted to get the U.S. government to deny Qatar Airways landing rights in the United States. They wanted the U.S. government, and they're still trying to do this, to declare, the Justice Department to declare that Al Jazeera is a foreign agent, which would basically shut down its massive reporting network in Washington. All of these threats. And why were they making these threats? Because an undercover Al Jazeera reporter in 2016 penetrated some of the major U.S.-Israel lobby organizations like the Israel Project and Foundation for Defense of Democracies in Washington and documented activities that looked very much like foreign agency. And so you've got this massive campaign against Qatar threatening it if it doesn't censor this report and basically, you know, do the equivalent of burning the tapes so that nobody ever sees it. It's not uncommon for them to work behind the scenes with this sort of bullying, but this is such a clear-cut example of censorship. It was extraordinary. And Ali Abu Nima of the Electronic Intifada went over that and really made the case that whole ordering of RT to register as a foreign agent has vastly increased the Israel lobby's power by shaping and undermining reporting on the whole Israelgate controversy, which of course is Kushner and others trying to get the United Nations not to have a vote on illegal settlements so that the U.S. could abstain from that vote. And so he made a very solid case of the connection and why people should pay less attention to the so-called Russian meddling and a lot more to Israeli meddling in the U.S. system.
Well, the Israeli meddling is so great that you can't talk about it. They've essentially, as I mentioned before, they have to control both the media, and if they can control the political process, they also have to dominate the media to make sure it doesn't talk about it, because it's out there in plain sight. It's not, it isn't really secret. I mean, you could, a lot of it is secret. The connections are not known, but enough of it does get into the media that people would start asking questions, but they would not get any answers from any of our columnists. There was one at one time, Anthony Lewis of the New York Times, who was later replaced by Tom Friedman. Friedman actually said after the Netanyahu speech 2 years ago that the Congress is bought and paid for by the Israel lobby. He got away with that, but he was telling the truth. But this is something that should stimulate discussion somewhere at some level in the United States besides a conference every year in Washington, D.C., that the media ignores, and that includes the alternative media as well. It's an extraordinary situation because some of the people there, the people who all have spoken every conference, have credentials that gives them a certain legitimacy. You had former CIA people, FBI people. It's not like these are outliers, except on this particular issue. You've talked about what AIPAC has been doing. Talk about their efforts to destroy our First Amendment with the anti-BDS legislation, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which you've talked about in your presentation.
Right. Well, there's a big drive, and this was the focus of a major grassroots lobbying initiative when AIPAC citizen lobbyists headed to Capitol Hill on Tuesday. The Anti-Semitism Awareness Act of 2016, which was written up and then sponsored by Senator Cardin of Maryland, takes a really expansive definition of anti-Semitism that the lobby managed to implant in the U.S. State Department, and then says we need to use this within the U.S. to clamp down on college and universities that allow protests and organizations on campus that are focusing their criticism on Israel. And so the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act is advancing. Civil liberties groups like the ACLU have already beaten it back in terms of state-level laws, like in Kansas and other states that require contractors to sign waivers saying that they're not engaged in boycotts. They've already beaten those as First Amendment issues. But essentially, the law would fine Americans $1 million and put them in jail for 20 years. Would essentially crack down and withhold funding, federal funding, from campuses and universities that didn't outlaw organizations, clubs, Students for Justice in Palestine, and professors like Rabab Abdulhadi, who are eloquent and ongoing critics of the situation. And so it's a draconian law. 61% of Americans are against it. Yet AIPAC is determined to ram it through Congress and really clamp down on federal funds to any universities that have a thriving and diverse debate over these subjects.
I just read yesterday the University of Houston in Texas, that leading light of intellectual thought in the United States. University of Houston requires organizations that are sponsoring programs on the campus or professors or outside speakers to sign a statement that they are not anti-Israel and that they do not support boycott, divestment, and sanctions. It's extraordinary. that this is taking place, that a foreign country has taken so much power control over our institutions that the First Amendment, when it comes to Israel, doesn't seem to apply. And it seems to be getting worse. And it's extraordinary that it's not a discussion. We keep hearing about Russiagate, 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 when this is far more a dangerous situation, because it actually could get us into another war like the Iraq War, that would be even perhaps more disastrous, because it could involve Russia, it would involve Syria, Lebanon. It's a dangerous situation, and yet it's not being discussed anywhere in the media.
Right. And people who want to see Professor Abdulhadi really go through the incredible campaign that was waged against her and groups on campus, like Students for Justice in Palestine.
At San Francisco State University, not far. Yeah.
Yeah, so an incredible campaign, and she really laid it all out. This is what was done to me even before this law was passed. And if it had passed, or if it had been in effect, she would no longer be employed, and San Francisco State would be a completely different university. The other big initiative on the AIPAC agenda was the anti-boycott law, Israel Anti-Boycott Act, and again, they're pushing Congress to subtly modify a bunch of existing trade laws in such a way as to make the U.S. Responsible for making sure exports from illegal settlements and targeted actions against companies that are promoting the occupation are not boycotted. And so this is the law that fines Americans $1 million and threatens 20 years in jail if they dare exercise their First Amendment rights to actually target these activities. And of course, Ben Cardin's the sponsor, and if you look at his political contributions, it's amazing. He's got massive support from stealth PACs and individuals from AIPAC and Technion and all sorts of organizations that are behind this in his top 20 donor list. So it's a really concerted effort to curb free speech. And there's very, very little, again, debate going on in Congress about the drawbacks of this.
You know, one of the things we talked about before was John Kennedy's, President Kennedy, who I've begun to admire more in each passing year. President Kennedy had three positions that Israel could not relate to, could not accept. One, he was against Israel developing atomic weapons, and they went around trying to trick him, which got him really irritated. Second, he supported the Palestinian right of return, the first and last president to do that. But I think more importantly, in the long run, he wanted the Israel lobby to register as a foreign agent. And I am convinced that being able to stop that from happening, which Israel's lawyers in the United States was able to do, ended up being much more important for Israel than having nuclear weapons. Because if AIPAC had been forced to register as a foreign agent, there would not have been an AIPAC conference last week or this week. There wouldn't have been one. AIPAC could not function as it functions. It's quite clear, right?
Absolutely. And I think you're right about that. And yet, Americans still don't even know about his efforts. They were only declassified in 2010. They weren't even supposed to be classified in the first place. But all the Justice Department documents of the battle to register AIPAC as foreign agents, they're all online now. And yet, Politico yesterday reported of the FARA registration drive against Al Jazeera. And in passing, Josh Gerstein, the person who wrote this for Politico, mentioned that, quote, the organization, he says that FARA registration's been an issue of contention. And he says in the 1960s, the Justice Department and Senate Committee investigated the American Zionist Committee, which had AIPAC as a committee within it, over its ties to Israel. The group submitted detailed information on its activities to the Justice Department, but was never formally registered under FARA. Well, this is misdirection. This is phony reporting about the issue. As you know, Jeff, on November 21 of 1962, the Justice Department, in fact, ordered them to register as Israeli foreign agents. And if they had stuck to the case and if Kennedy hadn't been shot, they would have actually achieved this objective. And yet we have even today this phony cover-up style reporting. And this journalist thinks he's doing a hero's work, even mentioning the drive to register AIPAC in an article about Al Jazeera. And so the cover-up continues. And the amount of deceit in the mainstream media, when all these documents have been out there forever, it continues to amaze me. And it's not just about AIPAC. It's also about Netanyahu's role smuggling Krytrons back in the day with his friend Arnon Milchin. National Public Radio finally got around to, just a couple of weeks ago, mentioning in passing that there was a smuggling episode without mentioning Netanyahu's role in it a couple of weeks ago. Yet the deceit and the inability to be forthright and just simply say, yes, the Department of Homeland Security released all of these documents. They're online. You can see that Netanyahu, when he talks about nuclear proliferation and technology smuggling, knows what he's talking about from firsthand experience.
What's extraordinary is that in your efforts to uncover documents exposing the role of the Israel lobby, the FBI and Israel espionage, which is considerable, against the United States, the FBI neglected to redact Benjamin Netanyahu's name as the Israeli end of the smuggling operation. You
right.
put it out in an article on antiwar.com, and no one other than me here takes on the world, as far as I know, reported on it. This is mind-blowing. You have Noam Chomsky write his famous book, The Fateful Triangle, about U.S.-Israel-Palestine relations, and not mention Kennedy at all, because Chomsky has an animus against Kennedy. But those facts about what Kennedy supported were critical to understanding the U.S.-Israel relationship. You can't understand what's happened without understanding the past, the waiver that the Israel lobby and Jewish organizations that support Israel have gotten from the American government and from the American political structure, including the left. Extraordinary.
It is. And one of the topics that comes up at the conference is the amazement at the number of organizations here in Washington who are GEL organizations, G-E-L. They're good. They're doing good work. Except on the lobby. They avoid anything having to do with the lobby with great focus. And it basically means that they don't really attack the principal cause of a lot of the ills that they're seeking to redress. And so they engage in lots of furious activities and this and that, and yet they really don't want to tackle this issue because they don't want to get in trouble, they don't want to lose donors, they don't want to be accused of anti-Semitism, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so another accomplishment of this conference is really shaking out people who are willing to tell the truth. And after 5 years, there's a pretty good collection of people who have been shown to be valiant on this issue. And then the absence of other people is a clear indication that, you know, I would say they're not quite there yet.
One of the extraordinary things that you mentioned in your program and your presentation was the number of employees in these lobbying organizations. It's a small army.
It's an incredibly large ecosystem. And I just put out some figures from my book, Big Israel, which is now out on audiobook at audible.com, that in 2020, the revenue growth when the book was produced was on track to be $6.3 billion, 17,000 employees working full-time at these organizations, and another 414,000 volunteers. And these are organizations that go from the ground up. So there'll be a JCRC that's monitoring the media, bringing in speakers, trying to influence textbooks, trying to make sure kids go visit the Holocaust Museum. And then they will be in charge of 16 synagogues, and then they'll roll up into a federation, and then the federation will be a member of the Jewish Council for Public Affairs, which will be a body, governing body of AIPAC. And so the intertwinement and the ability to cross-pollinate a lot of really bad policies that if Americans knew more about them would be absolutely opposed to. It's a robust infrastructure, and nobody understands that it's there. Nobody knows what it's doing, and it likes to keep it that way.
Speaking of that, the other day I looked at a new, relatively new textbook for world history, and I looked at the section covering Israel and Palestine, and it was pure Israeli propaganda. Pure Israeli propaganda. No mention of the Palestinians, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who have been dispossessed from their land in 1948, but did mention 700,000 Jews from Arab Middle East countries who left those countries to come to Israel, not mentioning the whole history of that situation in which those Jews who had lived in the Middle East, North Africa for centuries, were not part of the so-called Zionist project. And Israel engaged in methods in order to get them to leave, either voluntarily or be forced to leave, like exploding of bombs in cafes in Iraq when Iraqi Jews were not anxious to leave Iraq where they had lived for centuries and were doing quite well until they came to Israel.
I would just hasten to add that the Institute for Curriculum Services, which is based in California, has made 11,500 changes to textbooks, and they work exactly the way I just said. They pick a JCRC in a state like Virginia, they figure out who's going to be the lead, and then they all give their references so that that lead organization can interface with the Department of Education. They make their changes to the textbooks, and nobody knows what has happened. And so they're in there changing references to the Israeli apartheid wall to the security barrier or fence. They're in there assigning blame to certain attacks like 1967 and 1948, and really in there producing the sort of changes that you're able to see. But again, they pride themselves on working behind the scenes. They're extremely well-funded. Their agenda is mostly to portray a view of Israel and Middle East policy that is not historically accurate by any means, but which serves their political agenda.
That's putting it mildly. I want you to tell your listeners some of the books that you've written. We interviewed you about a number of them, the last being Big Israel, which is just describes the organizations around the country that are primarily focused on serving Israel. Also, I should mention, by the way, JCRC is a Jewish Community Relations Councils that exists in every large city. And these are organized grassroots of Jewish, of pro-Israel activity among community Jews and non-Jews. And when something comes up in a newspaper they don't like, they're the first line of defense for Israel. So what you have is that no other country in the world has. You have an army that, even though it's a minority of Jews who are involved in it, this minority is dedicated, sophisticated, and well-heeled, and able knows how to act on a moment's notice with emails and telephone calls and so on. It's an extraordinary operation from an anthropological perspective. And if it could be studied in a way from a distance, it works, and it works to the detriment in the long run of America's Jews, I believe, but also the detriment in the short run, as well as the long run of this country, would you say?
Absolutely. And a former AIPAC employee who asked to be remain anonymous told me these are incredible astroturf organizations, the JCRCs, for AIPAC. If AIPAC wants to pit two candidates against each other to out-Israel themselves and calling for aid and support, they'll work through a JCRC to host a candidate debate. If they want to launch a particular program or combat a particular event that's happening, they'll work through these lily pads. And so it's an amazing vertical, horizontal, and diagonal integration. And it's something I go into detail about in Big Israel, because it's an infrastructure that is very much unknown to most of the American public. They see the op-eds in the newspapers, they see the priority treatment they get, but they don't really understand where it's all coming from. So that's one book. The other book is Divert, which is about the diversion of U.S. weapons-grade uranium from Apollo, Pennsylvania, into the Israeli nuclear weapons program, all based on declassified documents. Spy Trade, which is about AIPAC and the Israeli Minister of Economics, Dan Halpern's theft of U.S. industry trade secrets from all the organizations opposed to America's first and worst bilateral free trade deal, and what happened, again, based on declassified FBI documents. America's Defense Line, about Isaiah Kennan's transition from the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs to the head of AIPAC. Foreign Agents, which is about the J.W. Fulbright Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearings, which led to the registration of the American Council as an Israeli foreign agent, and a couple of others. But those are the important ones, Jeff.
Don't forget the Fulbright hearings. I'll tell you, these are page turners, and the fact is this information is not only unknown, it is kept from the majority of the American people, is a major, major tragedy. Are you working on another one at the moment?
I'm taking a break. You can only do this full bore, but there's plenty to talk about, I can tell you that. So to be continued.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today, Grant Smith. The website is IRMEP, IRMEP.org. There's also his Israel Lobby Archive, which is a treasure trove of information exposing what supporters of Israel have done in the United States to subvert this country. And I use the term subvert. This is what it is, and they've succeeded in a tremendous degree with most Americans, and most American Jews are not even aware of it. So thanks again, Grant Smith.
I would also urge people to go to Israel Lobby and AmericanPolicy.org to see all the videos and the transcripts of the conference that took place on March 2.
Oh, transcripts are up already?
Some rough transcripts are up, but the final ones will be up by the end of the week.
Well, I do recommend to all of my listeners go to that Israel Lobby and American Policy, and you will see these are the C-SPAN to YouTube recordings?
No, these are actually our own YouTube recordings from our proprietary official conference video, plus the audio. So
great.
It's all diced up by speaker.
We're actually kind of breaking up here. I don't know why, but thanks so much, Grant, for being our guest today. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Jeff.
Take care. This is Jeff Blankford. Thanks for listening.